There's something about Minnesota. They play, and I think this regular season was a good example. They play to their level of competition. They can, on any given night, when they're a 9-point dog, go to Boston and win the game by almost double digits. Or they can go to Utah when the Jazz are coming back home with basically no rest as a 12.5-point dog and beat the Timberwolves outright when they trail going into the fourth quarter. Like, it's a bizarre team, but this team steps up when they're facing either adversity or the best teams in the NBA. And that's why I need to be in Minnesota's corner based on health.
This is Pod to the Futures with Mitch Moss and Jonathan Von Tobel on VSiN, the sports betting network.
What's up, folks? Welcome in. I am fired up and ready for another wonderful edition of Pod to the Futures. Jonathan Von Tobel, Mitchell Moss alongside. We've got a lot to get to. The NBA regular season has come to an end. The postseason is here. Yes, it's the play-in, and they say that it doesn't count as the playoffs, but it's the postseason nonetheless. That's why I'm rocking the, if you remember, 1 year the Clippers actually rebranded to this weird logo. I absolutely love it. Go Clips. Got a big one tonight. I am very excited for everything postseason related. Mitch, how are we feeling now that the regular season is in the rearview mirror?
Good. I hope we never have another regular season like this in the NBA. Even you, like the biggest diehard NBA fan, I think, who I know, must admit that. I mean, it was awful for like 3.5 months.
Yeah, I think it was. I don't think it was very good. I mean, I keep saying in response to this topic that the NBA is still the only team that is held to its highest standard by its worst teams. You know, like, we don't complain this much about the National Football League at the end of the year when I'm watching third string quarterbacks start multiple games and it's absolutely ass down the stretch.
Sure.
You know, with every single sport, I think we get this. But for whatever reason, and I have my reason, or I have my theories as to why, the NBA gets held to the standard because of the way its worst teams play as opposed to other leagues. But yeah, it wasn't good.
Yeah, people love to live in the past with this sport.
Sure.
The people who do not like 2026 NBA, they claim that early 90s and like early 2000s NBA was awesome. And I'm here to tell you, it absolutely stunk. Nobody could shoot offensively. Low possession games, 82-76, bad basketball. But also, like, here's the thing with the NBA, too. It's every night for 3 months. That's the difference between that and the NFL. NFL is played once a week, and you have that for maybe the last, you know, few weeks to a month or so of the season. That's, anyway, neither here nor there.
Yep.
And some of these playoff matchups are going to be fascinating to me.
Yes. Now, we don't get to spend a lot of time on the Eastern Conference play-ins, or the play-ins in general, because they're going to start tonight. We are hoping, so if you're listening to this in the future, we are hoping that our double dip is successful. We have the Charlotte Hornets to make the play-in. That got there, obviously. Now we need them to make the playoffs at 12-1. Mm-hmm. We will see if we can get there. But I did want to start in the Eastern Conference with our podcast today, because it is a pretty interesting, I mean, both of these rounds are going to be interesting for both conferences, but where we're at in the Eastern Conference, there is some intrigue with some of the playoff series that are set here between the New York Knicks and the Atlanta Hawks, and then the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Toronto Raptors, and then we can get to some future stuff as well, big picture, like finals or whatnot. But I wanted to start with Knicks and Hawks, if you're good with that, because I do have a bet in this series. I did lay, you can find over at Stations, -104, Knicks -1.5 games. I thought that was a very fair price to lay with the Knicks to ask them to win in 6 or fewer games. But what were your initial thoughts when this series was set between New York and Atlanta?
My initial gut was Knicks as well, and maybe somewhat easily. I want to like this Hawks team. Let's admit that they were a great story down the stretch to win that division. And by the way, they were double digits to win that division late February. Maybe even like early March with that logjam on the top of those four teams. But when you go back and look at when they really started to get hot, and that was around the time, like February 22nd, when they played Brooklyn, they won that game, went on a long winning streak. How many of those teams were actually like decent or quality NBA teams that they beat in that stretch? And I'm looking at it right now, and I mean, what do we make of a win? Well, they blew out Portland by 34 points. They beat Philadelphia. They beat Orlando. But that's like it. A lot of the other... Now, they beat Detroit in overtime, but Detroit was out without a bunch of guys in that game, including Cade. They played Boston close. They then eventually beat them. They played the Knicks in a close game. But a lot of those wins were against the bottom feeders of the NBA. So it's a 2-month sample size, but you can tell me if I'm wrong in this. That's more about quantity than quality, in my opinion.
No, I would completely agree with you. I mean, even the Orlando win, I'm sorry, but, you know, really quickly, even though they're in the play-in, I just don't buy Orlando.
No.
They're not a really good team. Offensively, they have a lot of challenges. Defensively, I think they're fine. You know, they're fully healthy. And similar to Atlanta, they went on a little win streak to end the year, and it was like New Orleans, Golden State, you know, like just the trek of the league, the Pistons benching everybody again, too. So I would agree with you that in general, I'm not taking too much away from the Hawks' run here to end the year, given the opponents that they beat. And, you know, you go back and look, because you mentioned the Knicks game that they played. So they played on April 6th. They lost that game 108-105, and I went back and watched that game yesterday. And, you know, the Hawks are going to be presented with some challenges. I thought the Knicks were really unique in the way they decided to defend them. For example, Atlanta doesn't really have a ton of girthy size down low. And so what the Knicks did was they actually put Karl Anthony Towns on Dyson Daniels, and they put OG Anunoby on Onyeka Okongwu. And they were like, let's go. So if you want to get Kat involved in some pick and rolls, you're going to have to use a lesser screener like Dyson Daniels. And if you want to use Onyeka Okongwu, we can just switch that because we're going to be perfectly comfortable doing that sort of a thing. So that provides some challenges for them. And the Knicks have better shot creation. Karl Anthony Towns for a big can create his own look. We know Jalen Brunson can create his own look. Bridges, to an extent, can do it too. There's no real true ball handler that I think threatens you a ton. And even a guy like Johnson, he's a good catch and shoot threat, but he's kind of got to get some momentum. He's got a barrel to the rim, and you've got some size to offset that. You know, at times the Hawks were actually facing a too big lineup with the Knicks because they played Robinson and Cat, and they gave him a lot of problems in that game too. And I just think the more I've looked at this, the more I've thought, yeah, like this should be a series in which the Knicks be able to take advantage. The Hawks are a really good story, but they lack size and they lack shot creation that I think is going to really push New York here.
So what do we think of the total games in this series? It's at 5.5, and at DraftKings, the under between these two teams would be +120. And would you actually look at maybe playing the Knicks -2.5 games at a pretty decent price there? That would be +170, actually.
I mean, I feel like I want to say that this team can, the Hawks, that is, like my official prediction is Knicks in 6. And I feel like, you know, if I was really making it, I guess I would be like, you know, Knicks in 5.9. You know, like lean a little bit. What's more likely, the Knicks that, you know, get pushed to 7 or that they win this thing in like 5 or fewer? And I would say that it's more likely they win in 5 or fewer than they get pushed to 7. I guess the real question just becomes, you know, one of the things that the Knicks have done is they've been a little inconsistent defensively at times. Does that really burn them? But I don't see, even with the improvement of like a Nikhil Alexander Walker, the way that he's come around scoring 20 points per game with just like 3 points, or excuse me, 3 rebounds and 3 assists. I find it hard to believe that over the course of a best of 7, that the Hawks are going to find enough offensively that they're going to be able to grab 3 of these things and really push them to a long series, you know?
Yeah. Knicks to win it 4-2 is +425.
Yeah.
You do that? Okay. I don't like those. That to me, I would rather actually play like the total games or the spread rather than go like exact 4-2. That's difficult to peg.
No, 100%. That's why I thought -1.5 games over at Stations, it was -104. Now, for those who are listening to this in other parts, not Las Vegas, that is a local book. So that is the tough part about it. You know, you can find -115 at national shops like DraftKings, like BetMGM. I think that's still a fair price to lay if you want to lay 1.5 games with the Knicks. But I think that it's funny. I texted the Hardwood Handicappers group chat about this because we're pretty pro Hawks over the last few years. We've lost a lot of money betting them to win the division and doing all sorts of crap. And, you know, I was curious. I was like, do we like the Hawks here? And both Zach and Kelly responded almost immediately with the Knicks. And the more I looked into it and the more I watched that game back on April 6th, the more you see some of the intricacies there. So got blocked by the Hardwood Handicappers. And I think it's the right way to go the more I've studied this matchup.
Also, and I know that you have this opinion on other teams that are going to be in the playoffs, but when it comes to like experience overall at this level, I mean, I think the Knicks clearly, I mean, what are we going to get from the Hawks in their first go around here with a lot of young dudes on the team that have never been in the spot compared to a Knicks team that has dudes that have been battle tested now for several years consecutively?
Yeah, coming off of a run to the conference finals, this team is kind of used to it. You know, you look at Atlanta, Quinn Snyder as a head coach has been there and done that. And then you have CJ McCollum, who's made some runs in the postseason to kill Alexander Walker. I don't remember if that Timberwolves team, what am I talking about?
Yeah.
Nikhil Alexander Walker was on there too. I got confused because I know he was on the Jazz and I couldn't remember what order he was in. Was it the Timberwolves first and then Jazz, but it was Jazz and Timberwolves. So, but either way, that's not really going to help you out a ton here. So, I think it should be a fun series. I mean, I think game to game. I mean, like I said, I don't mean to misrepresent that game against that I'm talking about that you can go back and watch. It was a 108-105 game.
Like, that was a really good game.
A contest. Yeah, it was a game in which Atlanta actually did build up a big lead and then eventually kind of blew it to the Knicks. So it's not like that was a game in which they were going to it's not a game in which they got blown out there. At one point, they had an 80% win probability in the game against the Knicks. So it should be a fun competitive series between the two for sure.
Agreed. Now, in the other one in the East, look, I mean, I know a lot of people are going to predict, and the numbers bear this out, right, that the Cavaliers are going to sweep or take care of the Raptors in five games. This team completely flopped last year in the playoffs in embarrassing fashion. Then they go out and add James Harden, who has basically a lot, you know, he's your guy. You got the Clippers head on today, but a lot of playoff failures from him and duds, and basically some blown leads in there as well. Are we really going to be that shocked? I will not be shocked if Toronto gives him a series. And I don't even really like this Toronto team.
Is it fair to say Cleveland flopped last year? They were very injured in that series against the Indiana Pacers. They took care of business against Miami. They swept them with relative ease. And then they go into that series and Garland barely plays. They're really banged up front. The game that they blew, was it the 120? I think it was a game two where Halliburton hits they go on that ridiculous run at the end of the game and Halliburton wins it. But I think overall, look, Harden, I will never argue against anybody that says they don't trust James Harden.
I'm Exhibit A. I can't stand the guy.
Yeah, there's too many points of evidence that would tell you. And look, I'm a big data guy, and I'll get some numbers here on this pairing. So since we've seen them get put together, but I'm pretty fair in balancing anecdotal evidence with data. And anecdotal evidence would tell you at some point in the postseason, James Harden's going to go, whatever, dude, I'm a millionaire, and maybe not show up the way you want him to. But having said that, I'm with you in that maybe I wouldn't be too surprised. We should note that Emmanuel Quickley did leave the final game for the Toronto Raptors. He has a mild hamstring strain, as they're calling it. Every bit of news coming out of Toronto is making it seem like it's not that big of a deal. He's considered day-to-day, so we'll see what that means as we get closer to this series getting started. But it's definitely worth mentioning and keeping an eye on. But they essentially have a week off. They won't play until Saturday, so maybe that'll help them out. All right, so some of the numbers here for Cleveland. Overall, since Harden was acquired, 20-9 straight up, 13-16 against the spread. The market really upgraded them, and they never really met those expectations. In those games, just the team in general in these 29 games, outscored opponents by 4.5 points per 100 possessions and on garbage time. They were 13th best. They were 5th in offensive rating. They were 17th in defense. Failed to cover by 2.2 points per game. That was 8th worst in the NBA, that spread differential. Just Harden and Mitchell on the floor together, so just the lineups with those two on the floor, they have a plus 7.1 net rating, which is very good, an offensive rating of 125.7, but their defense gives up 118.6. That's floating around like 30th percentile, give or take a couple of points. I think against opponents that have better offensive backcourts, I think they're going to pay for some of their transgressions on defense. I just don't know if Toronto is it, especially when you look at this Quickley injury that could limit him maybe at the start of the series, or maybe he's just not healthy.
Sure. And that could be something, by the way, that even if he comes back and he's not 100% plays, that could be an injury that could get worse, like right away.
Yeah.
And then it's like, he went from day to day to he's going to miss like 2 weeks. And this is a series where you also have to throw out what happened in the regular season. They played, I'm looking at three times before basically Thanksgiving.
And before Thanksgiving,
And Toronto won every single game, and they were not even close, really. But that was before.
Look at some of the starting lineups, dude. Delonzo Ball, I think, started two of the games for Cleveland.
I was going to say, like, that they absolutely mean nothing. You can't factor this in. This was way before the James Harden trade as well. So based on this, and you can, I think you called this a couple of podcasts ago, that you're drawing a line to the Pistons. So you must have the Cavaliers going all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals then, and potentially even winning the East.
Yeah, I think they can. Yes. Like I'm going to be a little, I'm not going to be as strong as my Denver take. You know, the Denver is going to get to the Western Conference Finals. The Spurs should be scared of them take. I know Gruesome Legs on TikTok, which you can check out at Beeson Live. But I won't be as strong here, but yes, like I believe in the pairing offensively in Donovan Mitchell and James Harden. I think that is something that is going to help them at the very least make a run to the Eastern Conference Finals. And what we're alluding to here as well is I think the bracket breaks relatively well for them too. Obviously, you get Detroit if you move on here, if you beat them, and we assume the Pistons are going to beat whoever. Although, I mean, again, like, if Charlotte makes it out, like, what do you think of Detroit and Charlotte? You know, like, I don't know if that's just a sweep in favor of the Pistons.
Oh, I I mean, now the Pistons are checked out. The Hornets, they JBT, they we've been a little bit disappointed here now in the last couple of weeks with this team. Can't lie. But if they can regain that form that had them playing to that peak potential for what their ceiling was, it lasted 3 months. Basically, early January is when it started, and it continued pretty much the entire rest of the regular season. That's a team that I would not want to play. And I think, you know, the teams at the top are probably hoping that in the play-in this week that the Hornets do not advance. They would rather see any other team come out of those play-in games out in the East.
Oh, yeah. And I don't think, look, I think the Hornets could give, I don't know if the Hornets would win the series against the Pistons, but they would give them a damn good run.
I agree. I agree.
I just don't think that you would want to play a tougher best of seven in a 1-8 matchup if you're Detroit. You know, I think you're hoping, you know, this one of these other teams kind of limps in here, Miami or, you know, Philly without Joel Embiid is like your opponent, as opposed to a Charlotte team that statistically has, I think, the best starting lineup in the NBA.
Yeah. But by the way, there is something to this too, where even if a series goes five games, it can still be a good series with like really good games. Like you could have a 7-game series that's a total flop and just blowout after blowout. Like that's possible. So that happened, you know, the Pistons against the Knicks last year. That's, again, Pistons like zero experience going to the playoffs. Had a chance to absolutely beat the Knicks, and that was one of the best series of the playoffs all of last year. It only lasted 6 games, and that was in the first round.
Do you remember, I want to try to find the season. Was it 2017, 2018, or maybe the year before that? There was a Cavs, it was 2016, 2017. I just pulled it up. The Cavs swept the Pacers, but it was 109, 108, 117, 111, 119, 114, 106, 102. Like every game was just a nail biter. It was awesome.
Yeah, there you go.
And LeBron James is great, but yeah, so like these series, even if they're quick, they can be absolutely tremendous if that's the case. So going back, I'll say this really quickly about this Cleveland-Toronto series. The initial opening price at DraftKings was -900 in favor of Cleveland. That got bet down really quickly. I agree with betting that down. Like, I think Cleveland should be a heavy favorite here, but given their defensive liabilities at times, -900 seemed pretty strong, and that disappeared really quickly.
Is there an exacta that you would play? Remember, we did this before the season started. We'll talk about that when we do the West here coming up on the podcast. But there were two bets that we gave out on the West just for the teams to make the Western Conference Finals. Is there, and you might be able to find this in certain places, would you go like Cavaliers, Celtics right now, or is that too obvious in the Eastern Conference Finals?
No, I mean, it seems like that is a pretty obvious one, but I feel like that is the one that I would look at. I think that there's a chance that you could get that. Now, here's the thing. If you want to get like really froggy here, would you go with a, let me see, how would that pull off? Yeah. Could you go, can I convince you in Boston, Charlotte?
I would love to see it.
That'd be pretty good.
That'd be amazing. I would actually, if Embiid did not get hurt, the prices on the Sixers to actually make it would be kind of intriguing to me.
They'd be 40-1, by the way. Yeah, no, dude, trust me. I have them. I had like 18-1 from before the season started, and I was hoping that I would be able to get something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But now with this injury, which we should be clear, he is going to miss the play-in, and if they move on, it sounds like it's going to be games 1 and potentially 2 for Embiid to not be out there. So
okay.
They're hoping that's the case. For this series, though, final bets or anything, I'm going to sit back and wait. I think that there's a case to be made for this series to go about 5 or 6, again, floating right around what that total is, 5.5. But I don't really feel too strongly about the way this is going to go. I don't feel insanely strong about the Toronto Raptors either. I think they've got some liabilities. I was going through and kind of picking the defensive matchups, and it is going to be curious to see how they try to stagger or what they want to do with some of these defensive matchups, Toronto, because, you know, you've got to handle, obviously, Mitchell and Harden. Mobley, though, I would assume you're going to use Scotty Barnes for Mobley, because if not, I mean, you're giving up a lot of size in other areas. Maybe Barrett can do it too, but these matchups, the way that Harden and Wade can score, or Wade, excuse me, Dean Wade, Donovan Mitchell can score, I think that is going to be a big problem for Toronto to try to figure out defensively. So
yeah. So let me point this out as well. I'm looking at the total number of games at DraftKings. It's 5.5. It's -110 each way.
Yeah.
If you like the Raptors, I would not bet that. I would take the Raptors +1.5 games. That's +170.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Because
I would agree.
Yeah. I mean, it's, if it goes, that's the way I would look at it anyway. And I know that's not the exact same thing, because then it could go the Cavaliers could win the series 4-2, and then the over would cash, and the Cavaliers plus 1.5 would not, or the Raptors plus 1.5 would not, but I think that'd be the better bet to make there.
Yep. All right, let's see. Let's take our break
plus
here.
Plus 2.5 games is minus 130, actually, and that's not outrageous.
No, that's actually, it's not at all. You know, the market, and it seems to be, is somewhat in line with me, at least for this series, that Cleveland's going to be pretty pretty potent, we'll call it. But I think we're probably right in the range of where this thing is priced, or where it should be priced at the very least. All right, let's take a break here. When we come back, we'll hit the Western Conference, a fascinating one with a monster series set between the Denver Nuggets and the Minnesota Timberwolves. All right, there's only one playoff series set in the Western Conference because the other one is a dud. No, I'm just playing. We'll talk about Rockets and Lakers. But tough pull, obviously, for Los Angeles, given the injury situation. And the evolving injury situation, did you see, you know, I guess we'll start here. Did you see the erroneous report from like a podcaster last night, early this morning, that Luka's trip to, where did he go, Spain?
Spain.
The initial diagnosis in Spain was actually way worse than he thought. And then 3 hours later, he's like, somebody reached out to me and told me to retract the report. I'm sorry.
Okay.
like, where did you hear that
Fun.
From? So status quo so far. We'll see if Luka comes back. Now, I have seen, I don't know if you have any clarity on this. I have seen conflicting reports on Austin Reeves. I saw Shams, I believe it was, reported that the expectation was that he was going to miss the first round.
Right.
Windhorst reported this morning that the thought is that the Rockets are at least preparing for the potential that Reeves is going to be back in this series. Now, the Rockets preparing is not exactly an official report on Reeves' status,
no.
But there is some thought that the Rockets at least are gearing up for a shot at getting both Reeves and Doncic back. And I will say this before I hand it to you. Houston, you better not be in a position where both of those guys are back. That means that you're allowing a series with just LeBron James to be extended past like 4 or 5 games, which is an absolute nightmare for you.
Well, first of all, will anybody be stunned, even without Reeves and Luka in the first 2 games, if LeBron puts together like an all-time LeBron game where it's like 38, 12, and 10, and they win the game, and all of a sudden, like the Lakers lead the series 1-0, or it's 1-1, and then we get a report, oh, look at this, and here comes the Undertaker memes, and Luka's good to go, and the potion from the Spanish potion works, or Reeves is better than people thought. And then, like, I can't possibly get involved with Houston with the idea that one of those guys could come back because I can't stand this Houston team. And I, for the life of me, I can't get out of my head. And again, Luka played in both these games, but there was that stretch right around the first weekend of March Madness where the Lakers were on this. It was the beginning of a road trip, but they were horrible schedule spots for the Lakers. They were coming off of an overtime win against Denver. 2 nights later, they had to play in Houston. And 2 nights after that, they had to play in Houston again. And the Rockets lost both of those games. Like their numbers, they're like offensively and defensively, what are they, top 7 in both those categories overall somehow in the NBA? This is one where I just have to trust my gut on the Rockets. They're not a very good basketball team. And I don't trust this. This is the least untrustworthy, quote, good team in the entire playoffs to me. So I want nothing to do with this team.
Least untrustworthy team, yes.
Or
I think
most
I,
untrustworthy
no,
team.
Yeah. No, I got you.
Yeah. Least trustworthy team it would be. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. I mean, I don't really buy into what they're selling me. And so similarly, so there's a bunch of teams that come into this postseason pretty hot in terms of a winning streak. You know, Denver's won 12 straight coming in. We just talked about the who in the Eastern Conference? Why am I just blanking on the team that comes in red hot? Orlando comes in pretty hot into the play-in as well. Houston, one of those teams. Since March 27th, 9-1, they are second in the league in net rating over that time. They've outscored their opponents by 15.5 points every 100 possessions. Second in offense, 9th in defense, and they've covered by 6.1 points per game. Mitch, you stop me when you tell me there's an opponent worth their weight on this winning streak for Houston. Memphis, New Orleans, New York, Milwaukee, Utah, Golden State, Phoenix, Philly, lost to Minnesota, Memphis. Not much I really trust there in terms of, hey, the Rockets are turning it around. Everything's fine.
No.
I mean, their schedule was paper at the end of this. And by the way,
the Knicks game, maybe?
Remember too, and I was about to point out, for those who don't remember, that Knicks game was actually a pretty tough scheduling spot for New York. It was in the midst of a road trip, and they were coming off of a game against the Oklahoma City.
Okay.
So you know what I mean?
Yep.
So I don't really buy it. They might have been looking ahead to Memphis too. It was the front end of a back-to-back. But either way, like I think this team is all the flaws that they've shown us throughout. You know, the half court offense is a little shaky at times. And I'll say it. I mean, is this a hot take? I think JJ Redick might be the better head coach.
Oh, wow. Yeah, maybe. Maybe he is.
So when it comes to tactician and like X's and O's and scheming things up, I mean, Ime Udoka, as we've said before, his strategy is call a timeout, make fun of his team, and then walk away.
Yeah, there you go.
I just don't know.
JJ can also do that, though, too, right? When he's belittling players on the sideline during the game.
Yep, that's a good point. The whole Vanderbilt thing the other day was a little weird where he just ignored him the whole time in the huddle and then walked off. That could probably wear at times. I mean, they're somewhat similar to each other, but this whole point here is I'm with you. I think Houston should be able to take care of business against LeBron
yes.
and everybody else. Yes. But do I trust them to do it to the point of you're looking at these prices that they're laying? Absolutely not. Am I jumping in to sit there and go, yeah, you know what? I think Houston at -700 is a fair deal. No shot. Mm-hmm. And laying, you know, whatever series spread with them in this thing against the Lakers, if you trust them, -2.5 games is -110 over at MGM. -1.5 games, -375. I don't know if I trust that they're going to be able to do what we need them to do, what they should be able to do.
I would say this. The betting menus today are so large when it comes to any sport, and the NBA playoffs will be no exception. There are several other bets to potentially make for a series prop bet, for a player prop in an individual game, for the point spread or the total. It doesn't matter. You can name anything that you would like. This is one where I would look elsewhere and just say, I'm going to pass. Literally zero chance I would lay 2.5 games at +110 with the Rockets. One of the last bets that I would make on the entire board for the first round overall, because of I don't want to be that guy who tells you that the Lakers have absolutely no chance without these two guys, and all of a sudden LeBron plays the role of Superman in one of the first two games like we talked about, and then you get the news that looky here, one of the guys can come back and play in the game. The Rockets have blown so many like late games. And what is up with Kevin Durant going to the free throw line in crunch time and missing? He's like a 90% free throw shooter. Unless the game is tied or they trail by two, he's like, I don't know what the percentage, but it happened several times in key games this year.
And I believe, I have to go back and look and remember, but you referenced, you know, the game that they played against each other. I think that was one of those games where in the fourth quarter, they completely fell apart, the Rockets, and J.J. Redick was just sending simple double teams at the top of the key to Kevin Durant, and he had no idea what he was going to do in that game. I think he ended up turning the ball over like six times. They were scoreless over the last few minutes, ended up blowing it, so their half-court execution is a nightmare, and I just don't really trust what they're going to do on offense. So I'm with you. Now, I think one interesting angle that I wanted to bring up here, and I'm going to get a little bit more into these over the next couple of days for money moves. Luke Kennard is the second choice on the board at +450 to lead the series and made three-pointers. Reed Sheppard is your favorite at even money. I do wonder if Sheppard's maybe being a little overpriced because let me walk you through this scenario really quickly. If the Lakers, I mean, I would assume part of the game plan is, hey, Reed Sheppard, come over here. We're going to go after you almost like every single possession and try to at least pick at that weakness defensively. Can you not see a scenario in which Sheppard is getting absolutely just dog walked on defense and Ime Udoka is like, you know what, get out of here, and you know, throws him on the bench for long stretches or whatever it is because he can't feel like he can trust him on defense, and that's going to cut in obviously to his offensive production, his ability to make threes, and Kennard is such a good shooter. He hasn't been taking a ton of threes. You know, if you look at the stretch where he's really seen his usage increase the last couple of games. I won't include the last one against Utah, but against Phoenix, he just took four attempts on 28 minutes, just two in 32 minutes against Golden State. Had a couple of games where he's like, I took five, but I do wonder if maybe at even money, Reed Sheppard's getting a little mispriced and we can take a little shot on Kennard to lead the series in 3 points.
So in, it looks like, seven games in the month of April, Reed Sheppard averaged 8 threes a game attempts. He made 45.5% of them, but he was also 9 of 14 in one of those games. He took 12 in the final game against Memphis, only hit 4. He's had a lot of games recently. 2 of 10 against the Wolves, 3 of 14 against the Bulls, 1 of 6 against the Lakers, 1 of 5. There's a 1 of 9 in there, a 3 of 10. Now, I'm pointing out the bad games. He's had some good games in there as well. My point is, like, Reed Sheppard can have these games where he's 2 of 11 from 3, and you're like, man, well, it just didn't go for him. Now, he can get scorching hot as well. But if you told me right now that Kennard is going to take 7 threes per game, is that a fair number?
Seems like a lot, but okay. I mean, they might ask him to.
If you told me he was taking that many, I would absolutely bet on him. Yeah. But if you told me he was going to take five a game, I would not bet on him. Because then he basically has to hit three or four every single game.
Part of my logic is starting the needle that at some point Reed Sheppard just like Ime Udoka gets sick of him and he's like, dude, you suck on defense. Get out of here. Which I was going to say, which is in the realm of possibility for Ime Udoka, considering the way he handles this team at times. So with that, all right, any bets at all for this series? You got anything at all?
I do not. No.
Yeah, I got nothing. I'll sit back and watch. Should be an interesting one. And I'm with you, by the way. I am a LeBron stan. I would love I think it would be great if you just get two mega games from LeBron and they're just, it's 1-1 or hell, remember against that Warriors team, he was up 2-1 with just Matthew Dellavedova and Timofey Mozgov as his best players.
Crazy.
So, I mean, it would be incredible to see if he would actually have something left in the tank for one series, but we'll see if that's the case. All right. This one, man, we're going to need a cigarette afterwards because this series looks like it's going to be fun on paper. Denver and Minnesota, the Nuggets over the weekend, sit there and look the Spurs in the eye and go, you can win this game, please go ahead. And the Spurs absolutely refuse to deliver. So they get Minnesota here. Anthony Edwards is healthy. He's back. So you're going to get Ant out there. And these two teams have had some dogfights in the postseason over the last couple of years. And I cannot wait to see what this is going to look like. Nuggets, though, with the market respect, and I would agree with that in terms of the way they're getting priced here in this series. We saw the open, I have to pull this up, I think, -350 in favor of the Denver Nuggets.
I think it's pretty close to where it was on the open.
Yeah, -360, +290 is the current price of DraftKings. So again, shop around, look around. But as this is set, your initial thoughts on this one, where it's priced and what you were first looking at.
Okay, well, can you tell me right now how healthy Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels are going to be for the Timberwolves? Because if they're 100%, that's the only team I'm looking at here. And I'm looking at maybe over for games. And I'm looking at, I mean, Minnesota right now, +2.5 games is -165 at DK. If both those players are healthy, that's an auto play for me.
I bet over 5.5 at -115. I thought that was a really fair price. Or excuse me, over five and a half games at -115.
I'm on board. I mean, now it did not go well for the Wolves this year in the regular season. Again, they played a lot early and the Wolves blew that game on Christmas Day. Then went to overtime and Joker had like 56, 16 and 16 or whatever it was. But that's the entire key to me. You're right. I think that factors in a little bit here, right? That the Timberwolves have played the Nuggets exceedingly well going back the last couple of years, including the playoffs. When they went to Denver, by the way, in a game seven, came all the way back from a huge deficit to win that game. And there's something about Minnesota. They play, and I think this regular season was a good example. They play to their level of competition. They can, on any given night, when they're a 9-point dog, go to Boston and win the game by almost double digits. Or they can go to Utah when the Jazz are coming back home with basically no rest as a 12.5-point dog and beat the Timberwolves outright when they trail going into the fourth quarter. Like, it's a bizarre team, but this team steps up when they're facing either adversity or the best teams in the NBA. And that's why I need to be in Minnesota's corner based on health.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you to your point too. Sixth best net rating against teams in the top 10 net rating this year so far, Minnesota. So they were outscored by a half point and they went 12-12 against those opponents. So again, you know, keep that in mind, but still, like, they just, to your point, they were one of the better teams against top 10 teams in the NBA. In that category, if you want, sixth in both offense and defense against teams in the top 10 net rating. So I'm with you. I think there's a couple of things that bother me. And I'll say this because I went over and by the way, I want to correct the price, -135 on over 5.5 games. The other prices out there, -150, -155. But there's two things that bother me about Minnesota. You hit on one of them. The inconsistent nature and the market's overvaluing. The market was way too high on Minnesota all year long, and they never met those market expectations. From an ATS standpoint, Minnesota, amongst these teams, the contenders, we'll call them, was one of the worst ATS teams out there. I'll get the exact number for you here in a second, but that to me is going to bother me a little bit. Is the market maybe still, again, just kind of overpricing them? Like, should this actually be -400 because the market's just been too high on them all year long? 36-45 against the spread this year, Minnesota is, according to covers.com. So give or take a margin of error for closing numbers and whatnot. So that's number one. Number two is the hardcore aspect of this. And, you know, you only trust a few guys, but not only the health, Mitch, we had this big conversation a couple years ago about Rudy Gobert and how good he was. This year, the non-Gobert minutes defensively have been a little bit of an adventure for them. And when Gobert's not on the floor in this series, what is that going to look like? They are in the 22nd percentile in defensive rating when Rudy Gobert is on the bench. They give up 120.6 points per 100 possessions. Their most used lineup, 123.6. That's not good. Naz Reid, for whatever reason, especially defensively, right, has not been anywhere near the same guy at all. And so that, to me, is going to be part of the problem is, what if that holds? What if in the non-Gobert minutes, they're just getting trashed? And over the course of a best of seven, however long it is, because I still think it's going to be a longer series, that could be the difference in winning and losing the series.
Okay. I think that's all totally fair. Let me flip it and say, what's the health of Peyton Watson?
That
is he not
big,
a key guy that like, defensively to use against a guy like Ant?
Hell yeah.
Right? So, and here's the comp I'm going to throw at you as you were running down the Minnesota numbers, and you were big against this team in college basketball. Is it possible that Minnesota would be like the UConn of the NBA, minus the titles, where just the market was way too high on UConn pretty much the entire year? But then you put them in the tournament setting, nobody's better than Dan Hurley, and here they are playing for another national title. The comp would be, I guess you could throw the Cavaliers out there as well because they were so bad covering like big numbers this year in the league. But Minnesota, where they just were not great against the spread. But when it comes again, you get them in this tournament style of play. And all of a sudden, oh, look at this. They know what they're up against and they love it. They welcome it. They embrace it. And here you go with their A game against Denver for, you know, a 7-game series.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, look, I think it's going to be a great series. It's. I don't think I would be stunned if either team were able to end this in 4 or 5. I honestly would be
so
stunned.
So would I.
barring an injury, obviously, right, it would be crazy.
If this is a clean sweep or a gentleman's and it's lopsided the entire time, that would be one of the most stunning results of the... But let me point this out, by the way. If you go back to before the season started, this is why it stunk what happened on Sunday. When the Spurs allowed Denver to win, we talked about this and recommended two different bets with the Western Conference exacta matchup. One was Oklahoma City against San Antonio, which is now possible. That was 22-1. But San Antonio-Denver, Western Conference matchup, that's it, was 65-1. And I know people who are on that bet. That's why Sunday was a kick to the bread basket.
Oh, by the way, did you guys note this on speaking of Denver and ridiculous beats, did you guys note this yesterday on Follow the Money?
The win total
result for Denver? Oh,
that,
my
that's
God.
That's got to be all-time bad.
No, it's not. I had over 53.5.
Well, for the people who had... All right. All-time good then
great.
For you.
Yes. I mean, come on. Last 12 games, you just need one loss, and then they bench guys down the stretch, too, and you still can't get one of those losses?
That's
so crazy. Last point on this series, too, and this will just be anecdotal. I'm an Adelman guy. I think he's a damn good coach, and I think that the Nuggets were dead on in going, you know what, Mike Malone, kick rocks. Go to North Carolina now and do whatever you want. You're an a-hole. You've driven a wedge here between our front office and everything else. Nobody in this organization really likes you from a personal standpoint, and maybe it's unfair. Maybe it's stupid. I don't care. Mitch, I keep going back. Adelman was great in that series against OKC last year. He pushed all the right buttons. He knew exactly what he wanted to do. And that was with Aaron Gordon with the hamstring falling off the bone and a one-armed Michael Porter Jr. Yep. Cam Johnson's really coming on strong. If Watson comes back, you still have Jokic. I mean, I really believe this is, at the end of the day, I just really believe in this Nuggets team.
I mean,
so again, I'm over 5.5, but I do think that they're going to win this series. And I don't think San Antonio wants any piece of them. And let me be clear. I don't think San Antonio wants a piece of either one of these teams, to be quite honest.
I think you're right with that. By the way, another example of Adelman being really good. How about this year when Joker went down and they were able to steady the ship? And before he got hurt, all of the on-off numbers, it's like Joker's having literally the best season of all time in NBA history. And when he's off the court, they go to like the second worst team in the league. That's pre-injury. That dude goes down for, what was it, a good month, and somehow they treaded water. Like, that tells you how good that guy can potentially be here.
Peyton Watson's part of it, but the most used lineup without Nikola Jokic has outscored their opponents by 8.2 points every 100 possessions for Denver. So we'll see if they can get it done.
Let me give you one quick NBA note before we close on this. As we're live right now doing this podcast, which sounds a little weird, but you get my point. Prediction markets, Joe Mazzulla is -720 to win coach of the year.
Yeah, last I looked on that ballot tracker that is put together, Mazzulla was in the lead of announced ballots. So
it's here's what we have on this. And
we got him at 8-1. He better win this thing.
6 votes have been placed out of 100. Mazzulla has 5, Mitch Johnson 1, Bickerstaff 0. But that's awfully early here.
Oh, of course it is. But wouldn't that be crazy if Bickerstaff just finished 3rd and Mitch Johnson actually beat him and we never talked about
Michael
it?
Michael Pena from The Ringer did not have Bickerstaff top 3.
Charles, really? Who is
Charles
his 3rd?
Lee, which you can make a case.
Yeah.
3rd place vote.
I mean, coach is so incredible. Like, you can make a case for Lee. You can make a case for Adelman. It's going to lose, but like, I've got Adelman at 66-1 to win coach of the year because, like, you talked about that stretch. Like, they were incredible. Anyway, all right. We spent a lot of time here. Let's reset our clock. Let's take a break. We got to get to Major League Baseball. We got to get to listener questions and a little bit more here on Pod of the Futures. All right. Mitch, our boy, yet again, Jose Soriano continues to wheel and deal and dominate, a monster performance over the weekend for the Angels. And he has now been cut down, depending on where you shop, at about 16 or 17-1 to win American League Cy Young. When we talked about him a week ago, he was 100-1.
Okay, so great start. Could not have asked for anything more. He leads Major League Baseball. Well, it's tied with quality starts. He leads with wins, ERA, and strikeouts. Pretty good start, I'd say, for Soriano. So if he keeps this up, he'll not only win the Cy Young, he'll win the MVP, for Christ's sake. Here's the great thing about this now. Garrett Crochet this week, oh, mama mia. We need bad starts from guys like him, and he was absolutely torched. That's great. Skubal had a bounce-back start, but he's been bad so far. Max Fried's going to be tough. All these guys will be tough. Brian Wu is going today as we record this. And DeGrom was really good against the Dodgers. He surpassed a lot of the guys that he should have surpassed on the odds board, quite frankly. And at this point, again, I'm just every time.
We should. I just also know, too, Hunter Brown's on the IL. So, like, that's another potential contender that's, like, shelved for a little bit. So that really helps him, too.
So it's awesome. Great start. And again, every time that he goes, I'm like, okay, is this the day that it's going to be 3 innings and 5 hits and, you know, 7 walks? With a bunch of runs, he's getting better every start.
He's getting absolutely better. And, you know, I've talked actually a lot about this with Adam Burke. And Burke's just an absolute freak and a nerd about Major League Baseball and everything like that. And I sent him a tweet. I think it was Rob Friedman who tweeted this out. Excuse me. And it was an overlay of Jose Soriano last year to this year and just the difference in his mechanics. And as Adam has noted 1,000 times, for those who don't know, Mike Maddux is the pitching coach for the Anaheim Angels now, and he seems to have worked some magic with him. And don't look now, he's not going to win Cy Young, but, like, you know, Reed Detmers has put together a pretty good couple of starts too. So, you know, Maddux and the effect that a pitching coach can have on these guys, it seems to be very apparent because Soriano has been absolutely tremendous. So let me ask the question then, is he worth betting now? Yes, we talked about it last week. Is it worth sprinkling in if you're late now to the party with Soriano? Again, want to make sure I have this price right. Soriano at 18-1 at DraftKings.
I would lean no. How about you?
I would agree just because of the risk of, again, like, we needed a dude to get to 200 innings that's never done it before.
Right. If he was still 30-1 or higher, I would say yes, but 18 can't get there. Can I throw out a couple of players to keep your eye on for National League MVP?
Sure.
This is going to be, again, preface this. It's Ohtani. He's -220 now at DK. And I haven't even bet these. I'm looking. I have guys circled, right? One would be O'Neill Cruz, who I know Dustin Sweetelson here bet him at 150-1. In case the Pirates were to be like a first-place team and that dude's a total freak and he's awesome offensively. And, you know, there was a catcher who put together one historically great season last year in Cal Raleigh and came up a little bit short. 60 home runs, couldn't get it done. Yeah. Don't look now, but Drake Baldwin from the Braves is putting together a phenomenal start to the year. Yeah. He's 75-1. Again, I want to throw it out there as something to maybe monitor moving forward in case he keeps, you know, slugging along like this. But it's Ohtani that you have to beat, and that's one of the reasons why I haven't bet him. I think it's just kind of fun to keep your eyes on some of these guys.
I believe Baldwin took Soriano deep in the game that they played in Anaheim. It almost got him again, but it died at the track. So he deserves MVP just for that. No. I would like to bring up one as well. And it's funny, I got an oddly defensive tweet about this, even though I think I've brought this kid up before on this podcast, and I know I brought this up to Adam. But the evolving market in Rookie of the Year is also getting pretty interesting. Chase DeLauder is +180 to win AL Rookie of the Year. McGonigal is at +290. I would direct your eyes, though, to a guy who's got an ERA on par with Jose Soriano. For those who haven't seen him yet, Parker Messick for Cleveland has been off to an incredible start. A 0.5 ERA, over 17 and two-thirds and three starts. You look at his Savant page and some of the underlying metrics. You know, for the most part, you're looking at a dude whose numbers really hold up. You know, the fastball velo, all right, you could deal. He's in the 23rd percentile, but does a good job of pitching to contact, and it's weak contact at that. Barrel rate in the 84th percentile, same with his hard hit rate. He can generate some chases. His off-speed stuff's pretty good. Chase rate of 37%. He's not going to challenge a lot of dudes and get them to whiff, but the stuff seems legit, and he's still floating around 15-1 to win American League Rookie of the Year. I mean, obviously, if you got an ERA of 0.5 over the course of the season, that's going to get it for you. But I even think it's still at 15-1, given some of the guys that are in front of him. I think that's worth a small stab here for Messick. He looks legitimately good, and he's a lefty too, which is always going to help.
No, that's still definitely a number worth grabbing at 15, where anything can basically happen. Typically, they don't love to give it to pitchers, but it's happened recently, right? The infamous Paul Skeens year. So, the number on DeLauder has moved so quickly because of his hot start. Like, who's to say that he's actually going to put together a season where he has 25 home runs? He might just fizzle out and hit 12. You know, you never know.
All right, we got a couple minutes left. You got a friend here? What's going on?
No, I keep going here.
Dash! You can't hear me. All right, a couple of minutes left here to end the program. And before we get out, and as you deal with your child, I know you did add a college basketball future.
Well, so we remember last year coming off the heels of the Michigan, or last week, Michigan won. We recorded bright and early Tuesday morning. I didn't want to give away anything because it's something that I wanted to bet before I announced any players or teams to look out for. But I said, like, if you're going to track the transfer portal, look at the guys who are highly rated, and then you can go from there. Well, I had my alert set to Flory Badunga, the Kansas transfer, who some have called the best. And now it's a brief stint here. We're talking about, 3-4 years of this transfer portal being a thing. But they called him the best kid to ever hit the portal. And I told myself, if the number was right, no matter where he goes, I'm going to bet that team. Well, it was announced on the same day, on Sunday, that along with Jackson Shellstead, who was hurt last year for Oregon, but also like top 20 kid in the portal, they were going to be a combo to go to Louisville. And so I immediately looked for the best number on Louisville, and I grabbed 100-1. And then later on that day, this is not official yet, but there was a report / rumor that came out that they are like hot and heavy on John Blackwell from Wisconsin, who is like either second, third, fourth, whatever. He's a top 5 kid in the portal as well. And when that report came out, rumor, I grabbed more at 60-1. So now I have a pretty strong position on Louisville as my one bet so far next year to win the entire thing.
Okay. That's still available?
No, unfortunately not. I think it was like, it's unbettable now, but I wanted to point that out in case something happens and they float back up, or if people have whatever kind of out that could be out there that we're unaware of. If you have a rogue number on Louisville, I would take it.
All right. How's the Masters for you?
Horrible. How about you? Oh, really? I got killed betting that event. How about you?
Not great. The thing that really stung me, what chapped my cheeks, is I bet Scotty at 17-1 on Saturday to win. And then Sunday, speaking of 17, that birdie that he singed the edge with on 17, it would have put him at 12-under. Man, yeah, oh man.
I had 22-1 in pocket on him as well when he got to 5-under on Saturday. Here's what I never did. And we talked about it as Rory was running away with it on Friday and followed the money. And I brought up, you need to look at winner without. Had I bet Scotty winner without when he was 12 back, that would have been a winner. Or had you bet him winner without, that would have been a winner. That hurts a little bit.
Yep. I am never going to believe an athlete, too, by the way, when he says
never
he's
again.
Injured.
I'm out.
Colin Morikawa, like what happened to the back,
that's
buddy?
The part that got me the most. That hurt. I made three bets, decent-sized bets, missed the cut, and I played two matchups against him. The guy almost won the tournament. He was 11 under Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
It was absolutely ridiculous. All right, we are up against it. Went a little long because of the hardcore NBA stuff, but I think Mitch and I both, we enjoy the NBA postseason, and it is going to be, I think, a pretty good one. Like, I'm pretty excited. If the right teams make it out of the play-in, I am looking forward to what this has to offer for the NBA postseason.
And we would look at, by the way, as a recap, over Wolves, Nuggets, 5.5 games.
Yes, and Knicks minus 1.5 as well. Remember, VSiN.com, speaking of the NBA postseason, and the NHL postseason is coming up, we are going to have a lot of great content up there at VSiN.com, so make sure you check it out. Get in on some of our subscriptions as well. Check out Mitch on Follow the Money. I'm before him on Money Moves, all of it starting at 1 p.m. Pacific time, or 11 a.m. Pacific time, whatever. We'll see you next week here on Pod to the Future.